Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues, our impacts and relationships with the environment. I'm Chris Cherniak. Co-host Nell Larson is away this week. Joining us in the studio is our first guest. They're both from Heal, Utah. It's Grace Olskamp. She's Communications and Outreach Associate. And Michael Shea. He's the Senior Policy Associate with Heal, Utah. And they're here to talk about, ostensibly, the upcoming Utah State Legislation session, right? It's a session that begins January 28th. Is that correct?
Yep.
January 28th, and it runs for how long?
45 days, so March 13th.
Second week of March.
Yeah.
Second week of March. Just to be clear, is this the only time of the year they meet, or will they meet other times of the year? This always seems to be the most eventful time.
Yeah, so the way the Utah Constitution works is basically the legislature has to meet for 45 days each year. That is the only time that they can pass bills, except for when the governor calls a special session.
Special sessions.
Right. Mm-hmm. But they do, after the session, meet about once a month to sort of talk business, but they can't actually pass any laws. They can only do that during a special session or the actual session.
Okay. So that obviously then makes this a very important 45 days.
Yep.
Yep.
This is how we figure out how the state's money will be spent.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about some of the environmental bills or otherwise resolutions sometimes that are on the docket right now, because there's always a possibility that during the 45-day period that other bills or resolutions may come up.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, it's always a couple surprises throughout the year, throughout
including
the session.
Day number 45 with like 3 hours remaining or something, things suddenly appear.
Yeah, that things can change quickly,
Okay, so that's what Heal Utah, among other things, does as an environmental advocacy group. You kind of monitor what's going on in the state legislature, correct?
Yeah, we both monitor sort of what's going on up there, but we also, put together bills and find legislative sponsors and try to get them through the sausage making.
You do?
Yes.
You assist? Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay. And we maybe talk about some of the bills you've helped draft in the past.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
Let's talk about what's on the docket right now. And the one I mentioned, highlighted in the introduction, is this up to $100 million for air quality appropriations, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did that happen? Who came up with $100 million?
Yeah, so it's in the governor's proposed budget that $100 million would go towards one-time only air quality projects and programs. But again, it's appropriation, so the legislator still has to actually approve this money. But there's plenty of things that it could be spent on.
Right. So the governor says, all right, I'm willing to commit up to $100 million on different air quality, air-related programs and projects. Mm-hmm. It's now up to the legislature to figure out how they'd like to spend that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yep.
So what are some of the things that are being thrown around as far as spending, programs, projects on air quality?
Yeah, so one of the ones that so we, as obviously environmental advocacy group, have plenty of ideas where this could be spent. And one of them is about our wood-burning stoves, which there's about estimated 110,000 stoves just in the Wasatch Front, and that those contribute 12% to 15% of our small particulate matter air pollution, which is what we see in the wintertime most heavily. And so if there was some sort of change-out program that, this money could go towards changing out people's wood-burning stoves, just more environmentally friendly ones. A fully comprehensive one could cost up to like $450 million. But if we did one that was more focused, maybe just in low income communities, it could obviously cost a lot less, but be really incredibly effective.
And what we're finding with the wood burning stoves is that, it's not so much that these 110,000 stoves are all sort of equally contributing to that 10% to 15%. The real problem are the individuals and homes that actually use wood burning stoves for heating, Right. And so they are running, they are burning that those stoves 24/7. And that is a much, much smaller number in terms of how many people are doing that. But it is an incredibly outsized contributor to the air quality problem. Mm-hmm. It, you know, you're looking at maybe a few hundred individuals that are contributing, you know, 6% of the total, like total part of the air quality problem, which is a huge, huge deal.
Yeah. So you said 110,000 wood burning stoves in total.
Right.
Estimated mm-hmm. in the Salt Lake Valley, whatever mm-hmm. that area. Okay.
In the non-attainment area. And so in, all along the Wasatch Valley.
All along, so that's several counties.
Yes.
Okay. But a small percentage of that 110,000 is used by homeowners as their primary source of heat.
Yep.
Correct.
So they're burning wood to heat their cabins or whatever.
Homes that are in downtown Salt Lake.
Yeah,
that
are still fully dependent on it.
Like cords of wood out in the back.
Oh, yeah.
And they're
yeah.
just burning wood. And like you say, those are the outsized contributors mm-hmm. to PM2.5, PM10, particulate matter mm-hmm. like that.
Right.
To the atmosphere.
Yep.
In the valley.
Yep. And we actually, the DEQ and the state actually tried to put a ban on wood burning during red air days a few years back. And that met with probably a healthy, not so healthy, I guess, amount of resistance from, people that didn't want the government telling them
that
you can't burn wood. We need to heat our homes. And
right.
And so I think that, you know, and actually the legislature came back and actually banned a ban on wood burning. And so there's a lot of different things happening with wood burning right now. There's a possibility that we might try to revisit the ban or something. But I think the biggest thing the 100 million can help out with, or a portion of that, is replacements, is being able to go to these homes and offer heating alternatives.
Okay, so that's mm-hmm. what this money would do. It would go to these homeowners and say, hey, we'll help you swap out this wood-burning stove for a natural gas-burning mm-hmm. system or some other type of non-biomass fuel-based burning system, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so they wouldn't have to pony up as much money to do that. And so some portion of this $100 million, a small portion of it.
Could go to that. Yeah.
All right, so that's in play.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislature has to figure out how to work that out, I guess, how the administrative or the machinations that involved in setting up that program with the DAQ or so.
Yeah, it would be how much money they're going to give to the program. Does the DEQ need more employees to manage the program? It'll be up to the DEQ to do the
full logistics of something like that.
The legislature will mostly just determine how much money and if more employees are needed.
Okay. So that's just one part of this $100 million appropriation mm-hmm. bill. A couple other things was upgrading old diesel engines in locomotives. That's a problem?
Yeah, so there's it's kind of weird and wonky. Yeah. So there's, I think it's about 60 diesel locomotive engines, and they run 24/7.
They have to. Their engines, they just have to be on all the time.
Exactly. And so they run 24/7. It's obviously a large contributor. I mean, not 50% or something, but you know, probably like 6 or 7% as well. And so upgrading those to like a tier 4 engine.
Cleaner burning engine.
Yes, basically. Exactly. I think it's estimated would only cost like $1.5 million maybe.
Per engine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, I mean, upgrading something like that's pretty large. So
okay.
In the grand scheme of things, wouldn't be too bad, but would make a pretty big impact.
But again, it's assisting the businesses who run these diesel engines to pay for a cleaner burning engine.
Yeah, and both the wood burning and this one is basically helping to eliminate a cost barrier that whether individuals or these companies face to help incentivize them to be burning something cleaner.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, they're not actual sort of giant train engines. These are things called freight switchers, which are just these sort of small little things that essentially go around the train yard and move right. trains around. And I mean, the problem is, again, and you're kind of going to hear this theme over and over again, is it's a small percentage of these freight switchers that are I think some of the engines are from the 60s, and so there's not even a tier rating on them,
right.
And so they are incredibly polluting. And they, like Grace was saying, they run 24/7. And so, you know, you'll have this dinky little freight switcher that's putting out the same emissions as all of Rio Tinto or Kennecott or the refineries.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all about kind of identifying, it's called cost per ton, which is basically finding where can we get the most bang for our buck. So if we're going to spend, you know, $10 million, you know, if we spend that $10 million, what is the best reduction in air quality that we can get? And
okay.
that's how we do a lot of our work is kind of analyzing the cost per ton.
Okay. Maximizing the efficiency of
yes.
the dollar spent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So diesel, locomotives, wood-burning stoves, anything else within that $100 million appropriations that you're really interested in seeing bear fruit?
So if we could do anything with EVs, electric vehicles, so along the Wasatch Front, our vehicles actually contribute about 48% to our small particulate matter PM2.5 pollution problem, which is more than industry contributes, more than things like development and buildings contribute. And so if there was some sort of state tax incentive to just incentivize either purchasing the EVs or even helping build out the infrastructure for EV charging stations. Utah has had somewhat of a rough past recently with EV regulation and legislation.
Yeah?
But I mean, it's something that could really, really help our air quality, especially along the Wasatch Front.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, again, 100 million, 5 years ago, could you imagine the governor saying, I want to spend $100 million? 3 years ago, could you imagine the governor doing something like that?
Yeah, we think this is the biggest proposed amount to go to air quality ever.
Well, and it's a testament that, the wheels of government spin slowly, but they do spin. And, you know, this is the culmination of a lot of hard work by a lot of people. Just kind of keeping, pressing this issue, the public pressing this issue with legislators over years, because you're absolutely right. I mean, I think, 5-6 years ago there, you would have trouble even getting a lot of legislators to admit there's a problem.
You're right.
And now there's a lot of serious discussions taking place, not only with the public, but also with industry pushing, stronger regulations or stronger measures, and businesses getting involved, because people are finally realizing this is, it's not only affecting the health of our society, but also our economy. You know, businesses don't want to move to a state that has terrible air quality.
Right.
And, especially, with EPA and federal regulations, you could potentially see sort of drastic measures imposed on industry, which would cost jobs, where there's sort of much easier and less expensive alternatives in other sectors. And
right.
so everybody's finally getting involved, and it's a really interesting time to kind of be involved in this.
Yeah, and that's good. And that's also a testament to the work that groups like Heal Utah has done, Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, mm-hmm. Moms for Clean Air, all these other environmental advocacy groups to bring education and awareness not only to the public about, in this case, air quality, but they also may do things with water quality and such. But mm-hmm. Lobby legislatures, bring education and awareness to legislatures.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So that's a great job. Hey, we're running out of time, and we're still on just air. Let me just reintroduce you. We're talking with Grace Olskamp. She's Communications and Outreach Associate with Heal Utah. And also Michael Shea, he's the Senior Policy Associate with Heal Utah. We're talking about the upcoming Utah State Legislature, some of the environmental type of bills and resolutions that are on the docket right now. We were just talking about this $100 million appropriations for air quality projects and programs. I want to get to this one is just astounding. I can't even believe that we're even talking about this, this thing called rolling coal. First, tell us, tell our listeners what rolling coal is.
So the technical thing that it is it's a tampering with a vehicle's engines, a diesel vehicle's engine. And what it allows you to do is to just on demand, spew like clouds of black smoke. And
purposefully.
Yeah. And it's
with intent.
A trend. You can look it up on
YouTube.
It's not by accident.
Yeah. This is with intent.
People will do it on bikers, on like a Prius is a common thing. It's a big thing on YouTube. On pedestrians. And obviously
you've
releases.
Seen this. Is this going on around town? Obviously it has to be because this is a bill.
Yep. And so technically it's actually illegal to tamper with your emission controls on your engine already. But it's just the enforcement system is what we're looking to improve, as well as the penalties for people who are caught doing this. So if you see someone doing it, you can technically report it. And we're just trying to make it easier to report.
Okay. Because it says this bill would increase the penalties and improve the reporting system for those who tamper with these engines to, quote unquote, roll coal. I consider this almost like some form of child abuse. Because poor air quality affects children and those elderly and those with compromised health systems. And this is people purposefully going out and somehow making their engine spew smoke, particulate matter, in addition to hydrocarbons and everything else. It's insane.
Well, yeah, and you know, I mean, this gets into, you know, in terms of tackling the air quality, there's the very technical, very impactful side that we were just talking about with the allocation of money, and then there's the side that's just like you just have those trying to figure out what term I can use on air, but people who just
bold
don't
choices.
Seem to give a rats behind about it. And it may not be, you know, contributing a super large amount to the air quality problem, but the sheer
audacity,
yes, of it is just insulting, because everybody's working so hard to try to clean up our air. And the fact that people are out there intentionally tampering with their trucks to make them pollute more is really a slap in the face to the state, and to, especially for people that have asthma, that have air quality problems.
Right.
And so, you know, the fine right now is not very high. I think it's, you know, like $100 for your second penalty. And so we're trying to make that harder. But certainly getting awareness out there that, you know, if you see this happen, if you're biking or if you're in your car and some guy goes blowing past you, you can report that, and eventually they can get the registration of that vehicle removed.
Okay.
So it's hopefully we'll pass and we can start reducing this. And don't watch Diesel Brothers on Discovery Channel.
Oh, okay.
They do that.
Yeah, didn't help with popularizing.
They
the
got
trend.
Caught doing it and are currently in a lawsuit.
I mean, like I said, it goes beyond just like it's literally endangering the health and welfare of our community by doing this.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's we got a few more minutes. Which other ones do you want to talk about? I'll just throw it open to you. Which bills are you most interested in?
Got some energy ones going
on. Yeah, in terms of trying to, you know, help Utah transition to cleaner energy, we're trying to do a battery storage incentive bill, which would essentially make it a little bit cheaper to afford energy storage systems. And so this would be your Tesla Powerwalls. Battery storage is obviously kind of the last big hurdle that we need to overcome in order to make renewables fully integrated. So obviously, the sun doesn't always shine, the wind doesn't always blow.
Mm-hmm.
Having battery storage can help mitigate those sort of intermittent periods and smooth the demand curve, to use a technical term.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're working with the newly elected Senator Derek Kitchen, who will be helping us run that bill. Another bill we're running at is a sort of a very complicated financial incentive to essentially sort of help transition and make it easier to for utilities to adopt renewables.
And usually takes Michael like 5 to 10 minutes to explain. So that was very impressive that he did it in one line.
Yes.
He's been working on dwindling it down.
But it's called securitization and capital recycling. And it people immediately, you see their eyes start to drow. But
that's an interesting point, because many times you may only have 90 seconds with some of these legislatures.
Yeah, and we actually have citizens come up and lobby with us a lot. That's all they have.
In the elevator with them, or walking up the stairs with them. So you've got it. You've got to get your message. You have to deliver a compelling message in a very, very short period of time.
It's true. Yeah, no, and it's, I mean, that's definitely a big part of our jobs is being able to try to take these incredibly complex issues and boil them down to where legislators and the public can kind of digest and understand and advocate. And
create a message that resonates with that particular type of legislature. It could be the economic aspects, benefits of it. It can be the environmental benefits. It could be health and wellness benefits. So you have to understand these legislators and know what, like I say, resonates with them to get their attention and say, oh, okay, well, let's talk some more about this.
Yeah.
So that's what you guys do.
That is what
now,
we do.
Now, in the last couple of minutes, how do people stay appraised of what you guys are doing?
Yeah, so people can visit our website, which is healutah.org, and we have a bill tracker that will be ongoing throughout the legislative session, as well as weekly, we call them Capitol Report videos. So if you don't want to sit and read, you can just watch a fun video with our policy associates talking about what happened that week. And we actually do a short little pitch as well. We have two events coming up. They are our legislative preview events, where we'll talk about what we talked about today, but also we have a handful of more bills that we're paying attention to. And so the first one is going to be at the Salt Lake City Downtown Library on January 23rd at 6:30. And the next one will be at the Provo City Library on January 31st, also at 6:30. And so people can come down and ask questions. They can learn more about citizen lobbying, which every Tuesday, Thursday morning, we invite citizens to come up and give those elevator pitches, sometimes literally elevator pitches to their legislators.
So they can learn to be lobbyists themselves.
Yeah. And we'll,
junior lobbyists.
Yeah, exactly.
Citizen lobbyists.
Even better. The best kind of lobbyists.
No, it's super fun. And, you know, if you've never been up to the Capitol during the session, it is a pretty crazy experience, but you're in the thick of it. And we give you some talking points and kind of give you a quick walkthrough, but then we kind of just talk to you in the deep end, and you can poll legislators and advocate for different issues, and it's a super fun experience, and if you've never been up there, we highly recommend coming up.
Bring your friends, bring your coworkers, because during the day.
But that starts. But say bring you could start by going to the Salt Lake City Library on January 23rd to learn more about the process and how to do that, or Provo Library
on the 31st.
On the 31st.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, last question. We have a minute or two. How has the air quality been down there this winter?
We've actually been pretty lucky. We've had a lot of storms that have come in pretty much at the nick of time, right before it kind of gets really bad,
today
where you
is.
Can kind of like start tasting it.
Yeah.
And so we've actually been pretty fortunate this year, but we'll see. I mean, it is pretty amazing to me that, it just doesn't even seems like even a couple years ago that you could have at least 3 or 4 days before the air got bad. But now, after 3 or 4, it starts getting bad. And can you imagine, if we get like a 2-week high pressure system where that just like locks
stagnates everything.
Oh, man, it's going to get bad. Yeah. So.
Right. So the rate of degradation has increased. So like you say, where it might maybe in the past took 48 or 60 hours before the air quality got bad. Now it only takes 24 to 36 hours.
Right.
Because more vehicles, more emissions, et cetera. More people, more
activity. And that's one of the hardest things about this is we really are making tangible differences in the amount of emissions we put in. But we're growing so fast that it seems like for every emission we reduce, we have
one more coming in.
Yeah,
high.
We have just more people producing, so we're sort of holding the line barely at this point. But it's just going to take a you know, a lot of pushing and to make sure that we can, you know, eventually get this thing under control.
Yeah.
Grace Allskamp, Communications and Outreach Associate, and Michael Shea, Senior Policy Associate, both with Heal Utah. Thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Again, it's heal.org.
Yep, healutah.org.
I'm sorry, healutah.org. Thank you. To learn more about everything they do and how you can be a junior intern lobbyist. Citizen lobbyist.
Thank you.
Junior, you know. Junior.